Alabama wide receiver Jermaine Burton.
On tape, I think he's a late round two guy. He's a top 12 wide receiver to me because he can boogie downfield. I thought his hands were fantastic. There's some acrobatic catches at the catch point, on the sideline, and then even on some in-breaking routes. And I think that's the difference-making trait for me with Jermaine Burton. Compared to vertical wide receivers, he's able to play on the outside because he can beat press coverage because he has some physicality to him. And he's got a little bit more density where I think he can play through contact, which to me means there could be a little bit something left for the future, because at Alabama, their offense was all vertical routes based off of the quarterback play. If Jermaine Burton, when I've seen that flashes on some slant routes and some dig routes and some out routes, maybe he can be a little bit more than just this low volume deep threat. So on tape, loved what I saw from Jermaine Burton.
Let's do some numbers that matter to back that up a little bit. 6 foot, 196 pounds, does have shorter arms, 4.45, 40, 1.53, 10 yard split. And that athleticism that you talked about, 82nd percentile vertical jump, 95th percentile broad jump. 13 of 61 targets this past season were inside the numbers. Again, that means 48 of 61 were outside the numbers pinned along the sideline. Now, as you said, major part of that was the quarterback play. They just pushed it because of the style of passer they had back there. Because with Bryce Young the year before, he did have 26 passes over the quote unquote middle of the field. As you said, the deep ball tracking from one shoulder to the other, he didn't like have to turn his entire body, which is like a tiny little detail, but one that I always look for because again, it allows you to continue that forward momentum. And it's just so much easier to go from one to the other. Was something that popped up for me. I do wonder if he is a role player, and then if he proves to be more than a role player, you're kind of getting something that you didn't draft in terms of high draft capital, and it's almost an added bonus on top of it. But that role playing verticality is definitely beneficial for an NFL team.
So my comps, like Darius Slayton's kind of in that role where we're like waiting for him to kind of turn the corner. Torrey Smith was a downfield guy. And then Michael Gallup is like my upside comp with Jermaine Burton, who was a vertical guy. And then for a time before his knee injury was kind of actually doing a little bit of everything. I think that's what I'm hoping for with Jermaine Burton. Those points where you're talking about so many of his throws were near the sideline, that makes his 0% drop rate look even better, especially because all these are really downfield catches. And some of those are way easier to drop because you have to do the ball track. And then he also caught 56% of his contested grabs. These aren't 7 yard contested catch situations. These are way down the field. So that's just like really impressive. His ball tracking, his leaping ability, and also just the ability to kind of stay grounded and play through contact. And then comparing to like Troy Franklin's and those guys, maybe a little bit faster than he is, but Jermaine Burton's a different type of vertical wide receiver. And I think that we can dream a little bit more from Jermaine Burton. He led Alabama in back-to-back years in receiving, two totally different offenses that you're talking about, did not get the target volume that anybody else in this class does, but that 95th percentile broad jump, the 4.45 speed. And then at times, like especially in that Michigan game, when Alabama really needed to get the ball on a first down, there's a couple glimpses of him being able to fight through contact, yards after the catch, obliterating a safety, and then running after the catch. So I think there's something to it, but he's not been overly productive. He's gone to six different schools in the last 8 years, six different schools. There's something that's up with Jermaine Burton that we can't explain. And I'm not going to like totally get into that. Well, but if he slides further than this, that's probably why.
It is fascinating. I mean, he started at Georgia in his collegiate career. His freshman season was the same one that, again, Brock Bowers, Ladd McConkey, Adonai Mitchell, James Cook, all these dudes were on that roster.
Yeah.
Then transfers to Bama. Again, a lot of connective tissue between these two programs. On paper, it would make you think that he can take coaching. We've heard about the hard coaching at Georgia. Obviously at Alabama, tons of hard coaching there. He does have the easy speed. Doesn't look like he's running too fast, but then when he's even with you, he's just right by you. And the game that really stood out to me was that Texas A&M game. I think those corners are going to have nightmares. And then, as you pointed out, he had the same, I thought, issue that Keon Coleman ran into, that some of those contested targets on the field were forced and not really there and kind of unfair if they are viewed as winnable situations for him. Saw him armbar, create space along that sideline, adjust into the air and creating the sliver of separation with that athleticism to go up and get it in those big explosive plays, which are being more and more difficult, becoming more and more difficult to create at the NFL level, is again, a role that is important. Just major questions for me if he's going to be more than that.
Yeah. And I think talking about just like using his arms like in the routes down the field, that's when you can throw like back shoulder fades to him. And that's not just only deep spread. You got to have 5 yards separation. There's kind of this in between that you're getting with Jermaine Burton. Just to kind of hit on, there's one incident though where there was a female fan rushing the field after Alabama lost and he hit her in the head. Obviously we can't have that. And there's maybe other issues that Jermaine Burton's had off the field. So that's why his draft status can go second round, fifth round, who knows with this guy. But me just judging off of his tape, I think that he was one of the better deep threats out there. And the athletic testing to me was not a surprise at all.
The tracking and maybe that more glimpses of route running probably takes him out of like that De'Ami Brown tier and more into the group that you're talking about, the Darius Slaytons, maybe Torrey Smith, even though Torrey Smith at times has been like incredibly productive early in his career.
Yeah, for sure. Question for you though.
Yep.
Javon Baker, he transferred out right when Jermaine Burton was transferring in. Was scared to compete. This is Javon Baker, your guy versus my guy, Jermaine Burton. Jermaine Burton didn't transfer to UCF. He didn't want to go compete.
No, I did not want to compete at Georgia. I mean, this is just what happens.
Well, he led Alabama in receiving.
I know, but transfer is now like something that is inherent to college football.
Sure.
Then Javon Baker went on to have like an outstanding final two seasons at UCF.
Yeah.
If you want to go one for one here and have Javon Baker versus Jermaine Burton in the NFL in their careers, we can check back here in 4 years and see who came out on top.
Can I get at least some draft capital? Hey, I don't interview these guys. I don't know what's going on.
You brought it up. I didn't bring it up.
Well, I'm just saying, it was just curious that Jermaine Burton's getting zero love out there when he was the Alabama leading receiver. I will say, for I don't know all the Alabama players that have led the team in receiving over the last two decades, I would guess almost all of them are first round picks, except it's going to be Jermaine Burton. So we'll see. I think it was just very hard to tell how good he was based off of the offense, like since Bryce and Mack, and even before that.
It did seem totally different when Bryce was at quarterback, and he even missed some time versus whoever the hell was at quarterback.
Yeah, so he's a mystery player. Like there's a couple of these guys where like I've seen enough guys in on round three, round four, where I'm like, I just don't see the upside with Jermaine Burton's, kind of like with Johnny Wilson stuff. Is there's something to this that I'm intrigued by. The bust rate is phenomenally high, but there's also like a path to him being a legit number two wide receiver.
Yeah, like you have to, again, transcend that like Donovan Peoples-Jones type of player who's all athlete running down the field.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Western Kentucky Hilltopper wide receiver, Malachi Corley.
We've done about 18 of these wide receiver breakdowns. Malachi Corley is like a totally different type of wide receiver. Super physical, used near the line of scrimmage, an easy guy to root for because like he will like literally truck these DBs out there. But I think we have to get into how is this going to project? What are the comps out there? Right off the top, we got to retire the Deebo Samuel comps. It's just completely unfair to Malachi Corley at this point.
I don't want to start this video negatively, but the comparison to Deebo Samuel is just attached to Malachi Corley. And I think some of it is his size, you know, around 5'11", 207 pounds. They had somewhat similar running athletic scores in terms of 40s and 10s. I will add that Deebo Samuel's jump and his shuttle were outstanding and not the case for Malachi Corley. But another part of this, Hayden, is after the catch stuff. And this is where Malachi Corley shines. I mean, back in 2022, he was third in yards after the catch per reception and forced a ridiculous 40 missed tackles. Now, that was also with an average at the target that was 6.1, which majorly was impacted by 115 screen targets over the last few years. Again, 115 screen targets. Mm-hmm. But whenever I hear Deebo Samuel compared to anyone, my instant reaction is real, true wide receiver aspects of Deebo Samuel's game are overlooked because of how powerful he is after the catch. Mm-hmm. And not every player that is a quote unquote running back with the ball in their hands as a wide receiver, to me, should be compared to Deebo Samuel.
On our first year on the Underdog Football Show, I remember Deebo Samuel for months in a row was dunking on my deep target regression model because he can win downfield at ridiculous rates. And then Malachi Corley last year, average air yards per catch, distance beyond the line of scrimmage, 3.8. So he's in the Mickey Mouse kind of conversation where you got to scheme him up the ball. I don't think anything beyond these whip routes, screens, double moves, mesh type of routes, I think that's all a complete projection. And I think that once we got the pro day numbers, they were a little bit more underwhelming for this type of projection type of player. So 4.56 40, that's 17th percentile. The 10 yard split was in the 22nd percentile. His short shuttle, 52nd percentile. Opted out of the three cone drill, like you said, opted out of the jumps. And those were a little bit of the differences between Deebo Samuel. Now, Malachi Corley can be a third round pick and not have to be Deebo Samuel to pop off. Jarvis Landry would be kind of an upside comp to me. Laviska Shenault was kind of a bust in the first round. Amari Rodgers was a bust in this area. It's a wide range. And I can understand why some people get super optimistic, but just trying to comprehend those three truck sticks that you see against Louisiana Tech. How much does that actually matter here? And I think I'm kind of on the side that you are, where I just don't value this like manufactured slot production that highly.
It's also an easy type to fall in love with because it's almost the same as like a pass catching running back at the college level who's undersized. People just love that type and they want to see that translated to the NFL level. Again, when this hits, this profile hits, you get Deebo Samuel. Right. When it misses, as you said, you get Laviska, you get Ty Montgomery, you get Lynn Bowden, you get a few other players. Just focusing in on who Malachi Corley is, he runs so much faster with the ball in his hands than in his routes that I felt. This underneath screen style, yes, it's twofold. One, positive end, gives easy completions to your offense, and that's easy production for him, and it can be an extension of the running game. We see this quite a bit throughout the NFL with
RPOs,
multiple different types of players, right? And manufactured touches. But again, let me say that the manufactured touch thing, that same time means you have to give him special treatment, right? And that's where the big disconnect here is. Like, you have to give him space, you have to get him in motion, and you have to manufacture the ball going to him in those scenarios. And even Western Kentucky was doing this, even just traditional screens, or they were stacking him and having him almost pause behind a route that was pushing down the field, and it created that extra separation for him. Whereas I think with someone like Deebo Samuel, it's different. He can legit stay out there and be trusted in two wide receiver sets. I am not confident that you can put Malachi Corley on an NFL field right now and trust him to be out there down the down in two wide receiver sets.
And I think when you're looking at how his production profile kind of got disseminated, I have some concerns. His catchable targets, only 48% of them went for first down. That's basically the worst in the class, because a lot of these little pop passes are first downs to try to set you up for a second and five. And I think that's just not very valuable. And also yards per team pass attempt, which has historically been a very predictive stat, 31st percentile, because with this Western Kentucky offense historically is just like completely outlier stuff. So we're talking about an outlier type of player and an outlier type in offense. And then the athletic traits aren't all that special. So I think there's a plan for him. We'll see how much this physicality translates. Everyone in the NFL basically is very physical and very big. Malachi Corley is going to have to start trucking players much bigger than the types he was trucking in college. That said, everyone loves this dude, apparently lighting it up with interviews based off of just watching him. You can tell that he really brings it in all situations. So I think there's a chance this guy's going to hang around. I think there's a chance that he can be very good on special teams. I think there's a chance that he kind of gets a couple of like running back design touches. We'll see if that maybe in 3-4 years, if we don't get Malachi Corley as a wide receiver, maybe there's a chance where he plays a little bit of running back. But like even like guys like Rondale Moore, those are like 95th percentile athletes in this type of kind of hybrid role. Malachi Corley just is not that. So I'm going to be way lower. I'm gonna, as a round four type of player, have him buried in my rankings, but I'm definitely rooting for him just because like this style of play, if it hits, it's one of the funnest type of players to watch.
He did go to the Senior Bowl, then missed the combine due to COVID. And since he missed the combine, it's felt like he's visited nearly like half the teams in the league on this pre-draft process. I actually think his tracked and reported lists have been up to about 10 teams so far, which is, again, very high. And it makes sense. Like, they were not able to speak to him in Indianapolis. There is one area that I'm really concerned about with him as a legit wide receiver. And I think he really struggles through contact on his routes. Like, he struggles to adjust to footballs versus man coverage. I know there are going to be a few examples that people can throw at me that show the opposite, but there, I think, are dozens of examples that show the opposite of highlights that you might put in my face. Mm-hmm. He fights the football away from his frame. I think he has questionable tracking.
Yeah, he drops
timing when there's a moment where you can launch in or through the cornerback, and he just doesn't do that. And this actually showed up in some numbers too. He caught 2 of 19 tight window targets this past season, 5 of 19 the previous year. Now, the Western Kentucky quarterback definitely had an impact on both of those numbers, but there were plenty of scenarios in those cases where tight window stuff was not him. Even in the NFL, if you're not separating, tight window stuff can be 7 yards down the field on these slants. To go back to it, that's where Debo Samuel shines, is you know, creating early separation. And as you even pointed out, back in 2021, he was top 15 in yards on 20 plus yard downfield targets and was 8th in intermediate yards that season as well. So this isn't just a manufactured touch player that Debo Samuel is. I'm afraid that Malachi Corley is a manufactured touch player, but that can like change the course of some games here or there. I just don't know if that's like an easy input into every single offense out there in the league. You're going to have a plan for him, is what I'm
saying. Yeah. We'll learn the landing spot, and we can maybe see, oh, this is a perfect, they didn't have a slot wide receiver. It's a very kind of innovative head coach and offensive coordinator. And then we can say, okay, this actually might be productive. I just can't get there with round two grades on him. I'm with you. I didn't see the route running down the field. Even if we saw it in glimpses, he didn't do that very often. There's maybe a reason why the Hilltoppers weren't doing that. I also have this theory maybe for another show that, because you can transfer and because NIL money is so important, why don't you transfer to one of the big programs? I have a little bit of a concern if you're not going to one of the elite programs now, because you have multiple years to transfer and move into a better offense. So that's another question. And I think that going back, maybe why he's getting all these interviews, maybe they're saying, all right, we're going to go grab a coach or a quarterback, and we're going to see if you can run an out route and a dig route and how your comeback skills are and stuff down the field. So it's a big projection for a player. I'm okay with projections in round four. I'm not okay with projections in round two. It's just a step too far for me.
Yeah, and even a lot of his double moves, it was interesting. Like, he runs 3 steps and then spins around and then almost curls and pirouettes out
again
down the field. Interesting usage. Let's say, again, 115 screen targets over the last two seasons is truly nutty stuff.
Yeah.
And it's why it can be so difficult to project these college guys to the league.
Maybe a running back eventually. We'll see.
Okay. Like Ty Montgomery, a name we brought up. This is Texas running back Jonathan Brooks.
The Longhorns have done it yet again. I think that Jonathan Brooks, if he wasn't coming back from this torn ACL, I think he would have a lot more hype. We'll see if he goes round two or round three. I ultimately have a late round two grade on him, my RB1 in the class, because 6'2", 216, and I think that he has both wiggle out in space, and then also he kind of has this vision, this cutback ability to set him up for a lot of outside zone success. And that's what he did at Texas, caught the ball a little bit. So he's the best well-rounded running back in the class. I'm not sure if there was some elite trait in any capacity, but he basically does everything at a pretty high level.
Based on what I read, it was just a clean ACL tear and no extra ligaments on top of that. And if that all checks out medically, he's firmly a second round type running back. And as you outlined, he blends so many aspects of what a lead back is at the NFL level. You mentioned the size, 6'2", 216. He does the dirty work where he will lower his shoulder to pick up short distance yardage, or when he can tell and has a feel for when a big gain isn't there, a home run hit is not there, then he'll lean forward for an extra few yards on top of that. But he also has the ability to get small and get narrow to work through these creases. He is smooth. He's powerful. I think he's an efficient decision maker. And he also has like dynamic movements, I think, when he needs them. Out in space, you see him in some of these receptions beating defensive backs in the open field at the third level. And then on top of that, as I just said, strong movements when also caught upon to those. I think maybe where is keeping him out of like the early round two or a lot of these first round premier running backs that we've seen of previous years, though, Hayden, is I would call him an easy mover, but almost a one speed runner at the exact same time. There's no like explosiveness that catches your eye that chews up a bunch of yards to make people miss in the open field.
Yeah, definitely not super explosive. I thought there were some times later on in the run, like if you reach the third level, where he would get caught from behind. I think that he's a fine in terms of long speed. The burst, the short area burst, is fine. But I think what happens with Jonathan Brooks is because his vision is so clean that he's able to actually make these split decisions instantly. And that makes up for some of the burst. He's also 216 pounds. So I think that he can run through some arm tackles. Oh. And like you said,
have you ever been on vacation after a long day of activities or sightseeing? You have a night in, room service, bathrobes, and television or movies. And when you're in a foreign country, you scroll Netflix or Hulu or whatever streaming service you have, and you realize that the library of content there is so much larger than it is in the United States. You start a new show, a new series, and when you get back home, you realize you now have to find that on a different service or pay for it in a different way. That is where Surfshark comes in. It's a VPN service that lets you virtually travel the world with a tap of a finger. You can go to Spain, Canada, Costa Rica to watch the content available in those countries. So you can try Surfshark today, totally risk-free, with a 30-day money-back guarantee. And get Surfshark VPN at surfshark.deals/underdog. Or enter promo code underdog for 3 extra months for free. You heard me right. 3 extra months for free. That is surfshark.deals/underdog. Today's episode is brought to you by Surfshark. You all know my obsession. Aston Villa Football Club, the greatest team in the world. Unfortunately, sometimes, because I live in Brooklyn, sitting in this apartment, I can't see specific content that is made around the club, that is geared towards Europe, that is geared towards Great Britain. Those are geo-restricted. And that, my friends, is where a VPN comes in, and that is where Surfshark comes in. It can seem like I am sitting in a coffee shop in the heart of Birmingham, England, so I can watch the highlights or the commentary of Douglas Luiz curling a shot in the top right corner, or Leon Bailey putting 3 defenders on the grass with his 1, 2, 3 crossover moves. And it extends beyond that. Can't see a YouTube video because of your location? Use Surfshark VPN. Do you want a larger library of Netflix movies to access, like in Canada? Use Surfshark VPN. It's totally risk-free with a 30-day money-back guarantee. And on top of that, if you enter coupon code UNDERDOG for an extra 3 months, they will give you an extra 3 months free so you can secure your privacy with Surfshark. Just go to surfshark.deals/underdog. Go and use it. It's super easy.
Getting through traffic, he's actually able to pick up his feet and sometimes move laterally with that. So you'll see that in some of the elusiveness, which he definitely has, third best elusiveness rating according to PFF. The yards after the contact numbers are solid. He's not like absolutely trucking over dudes like some of the other big power backs, but this was the number one stat that I kind of am sticking with here. Number one rush yards over expected on these outside runs. Love and that. That's where I think I can see this combination of the vision, being able to pick up his feet, making a guy miss. Yep. And then on occasion, if nothing's there, he's not going to dance around and be a complete negative out there too. So I think a really easy guy to evaluate, assuming that his knee injury is totally okay.
No wasted movement in those. Like, to me, he does a really good job of attacking the edges or the shoulders of these defensive players. And it's on one cut. It's on one step. And so then he can either break that tackle or, again, fall forward for an extra few yards. I saw on a number of occasions where the Texas offensive line, I think there was one play against Wyoming where he was contacted about 4 yards in the backfield, made someone miss, and then created a 2-yard gain on top of that. So he has like that hidden yards, dirty work that coaches absolutely love that can turn, you know, a 2nd and 13 into a 2nd and 8. And that is very different scenarios yep. for an offense to work into. Some numbers that matter to outline what you just said. 87th percentile in forced missed tackles per attempt. It's actually 91st percentile forced missed tackles per attempt as a receiver, 92nd percentile in yards after contact per attempt. He did have 30 targets in 10 games this season, which mm-hmm. is excellent mm-hmm. for college football. Absolutely excellent. We want to see that because he played behind Roschon Johnson and Bijan Robinson from the prior year. He had 24 runs of 15 plus yards out of 190 yep. carries this year. And there were singular games where he was impossible to tackle. 11 forced missed tackles against Wyoming, 12 versus Kansas State, according to PFF. And yeah, that's on top of the 187 rushing attempts he had this year for 1,100 yards and 10 touchdowns in just 11 games.
One of my like baseline comps for him is Melvin Gordon, who's like not super, super explosive. He's not super physical, but actually had a lot of wiggle, a lot of broken tackle ability in his prime, a bigger back that can kind of do everything. And I think that in terms of the pass game, I think that's going to be a huge separator for him versus a lot of the running backs in this class. He caught 28 of his 32 targets, a lot of them on screens. There's a couple times where I saw him down the field making one-handed grabs. I think that's a confident part of his game. I thought in terms of pass protection, he was both good in identification, which is like the hard 100%. Part. That's the hard part. You got to be able to see where he is before you can block him. You have to go be able to see where the unblocked defender is. And then he also has the size and the technique to hold up there. So really, there's like no weakness to his game. I think that you can want more from certain aspects of this, but I think that Melvin Gordon's a great comp for him right down the line. And I think in a class where I can very easily point to a weakness for every single other one of these running backs, I think that Jonathan Brooks is by far the most well-rounded guy, and I think has the capability of being a bell cow 300 touch back at the next level. So I think for fantasy purposes, I wouldn't be surprised if he has a couple seasons as a top one or two round pick.
He's just your super solid running back starter. Melvin Gordon, Najee Harris was kind of like the spectrum that I was working mm-hmm. under here. Again, the instant giddy up, the instant explosion that is like, wow, mm-hmm. probably not there. But that's totally mm-hmm. fine. And I saw the exact same thing as you did with pass protection. He'll go inside looking for work the outside of the formation, mostly a shoulder blocker in those scenarios. But there were a number of occasions, like against Baylor, if you guys want to tune into that game, where they would send pressure looks and he knew who the far guy on the edge was that his mm-hmm. responsibility, or the blitzing guy over the middle, and he would pick it up. And that is quite tough to do. And then against mm-hmm. like Oklahoma, he had some one-handed grabs, one against Kansas as well. So among like recent second round running backs, I personally would not put him in the Breece Hall, Kenneth Walker area, but I would put him like one tier behind mm-hmm. that compared to the other second round backs that we have seen.
Those two backs I just mentioned have a really like dynamic yes. athletic profile. I think that Jonathan Brooks is just one tier beneath that, but I think that he has some pros that Kenneth Walker doesn't have, for example. So yeah, we'll see where he goes. I think that if you're a team like the obviously the Cowboys, who did their doctor did Jonathan Brooks surgery. If you have nothing in your running back group and you need a bell cow back immediately, I think Jonathan Brooks is going to be that type of guy. And also, early reports, we're filming this mid-April, are that he's supposed to be back for training camp. He tore his ACL in November. So that's generally when these guys come back. Maybe he has to miss the first couple games of the season, but I think most likely for now, we'll see him in training camp and he'll be ready for week one. Maybe have to be on the Breece Hall thing where you got to take a couple weeks to get ready, but we're not drafting for week one of your rookie contract. We're drafting for year three, year four, year five. And I think that he's going to be the best when it comes to that.
In this class, which I actually think might be a bit underrated, but we'll talk about that with all the other prospect Agreed. Profiles that we're going through, just having the blend of I'm going to do the dirty work and be powerful when I need to, but then also at the third level when I do get one-on-one with the defensive back and just totally make a miss in a phone booth, tough to find. And I do think Jonathan Brooks has that combination.
I had one crazy stat, and this is going to be a trend for all of these running backs. He has 8 career carries under center. 8. He's averaged, or he's totaled, not even averaged, totaled 1 yard under center. What has happened in college football? Like, I wouldn't say that he can't run under center. Obviously, I think that on outside zone, inside zone from under center, he'll be able to do it. A lot of these running backs, no under center carries. I mean, it's a whole nother ballgame for us.
If I am remembering correctly, they did do some pistol stuff. So at least he has some work behind his quarterback, which a lot of these other running backs definitely do not. It's all just catty corner right next to sidecar stuff that they have in shotgun next to their quarterbacks. All right. This is Florida State running back Trey Benson.
He's got so much juice, 92nd percentile, weight adjusted 40, 4.39 speed at the combine, 216 pounds. And when you close your eyes, and you think about what an NFL running back looks like, you think about huge quads, huge quads legs. And that's exactly what Trey Benson has. He wasn't the total package. He had to leave Oregon after a knee dislocation, which is pretty serious issue for him. Went to Florida State, was never the bell cow there. They wanted to keep him on the perimeter. They wanted him to burst up field, and he created a lot of explosive plays. You're going to have to deal with a little bit of the dancing he does. The success rate wasn't always there, but in terms of just explosiveness and the ability to develop beyond that, I think that's the kind of upside that Trey Benson brings.
It is truly amazing how much juice Trey Benson still has, despite, I believe this was back in 2021, he tore his ACL, MCL, lateral meniscus, medial meniscus, and his gracilis tendon, which is his hamstring. And then the next year, he forces a missed tackle on 51% of his carries. 80 forced missed tackles, according to PFF, on 157 carries.
Jeez.
Just crazy numbers. And even a year removed from that, as you said, at 216 pounds, a 4.39 40, a 1.52 10-yard split, a 74th percentile broad jump, 37th percentile vert. Quads for days.
Yes. Man.
It's weird. His narrow shoulders, too, and it's just like this big balloon lower body. Mm-hmm. And that almost, because that of that leaner upper half, allows him to get skinny at times. But what I thought was the name of his game was he has this slow down and then acceleration element of his game, allows him to run with pacing, to win out in space, to change defenders' angles and ruin them because they don't expect a body of this size to run that quickly, that fast. I have questions on top of that, but I just wanted to give him his praise for being this crazy of an athlete despite everything he's gone through in college.
Yeah, he has like tremendous burst and like that tempo that he plays with. You can see that out in space. And his success comes on these zone runs, second best in the class in terms of rushing yards over expected on these zone runs. 67% of his carries went towards the outside. So that's the name of his game. And I don't hate that either. If this is his role, he's not going to be a bell cow. And you just want to let him absolutely cook players, give him the home run threat type of carries. I think that's not a bad role for him. But at the same time, because of that knee injury, he only has 349 collegiate touches. There's a chance that with some more development, more experience, that he can play a little bit more controlled. There's a little bit more variance to his game in terms of the type of touches he gets. And then you can all of a sudden see a more bell cow type of player. He has a size to do that. He has the base in his legs to be able to do it. It's just a little bit of a projection for him right now.
I felt he could work on staying balanced after and just before contact. He has this tendency to like turn his hips at the end of upfield cuts. Again, he loses that squareness, which leads to, I think, lesser second movements on contact. I saw like Doug Martin. I saw Khalil Herbert guys. Mm-hmm. And Doug Martin was, you know, a primary back. And then Khalil Herbert is this guy that we've seen in rotations a lot. You said home run hitter. Often we think of that as the 5'10", 185-pound back. This is 6 foot, 216, home big run, big play threat that maybe can develop into the lead ball carrier, can develop into the feature back, like you're saying. And on top of that, we got some workload in the passing game. 21 targets last season, 13 the year before that, even more this season, and a bunch of pass pro reps as well. There was this really easy hands catch and awesome penny catch he made along the sideline against Clemson on a wheel route that he still then threw his shoulder back and twisted and turned along the sideline. So there's like some naturalness to his game. Again, I think maybe with more reps, we see that naturalness come into play more as a runner.
Just to put some numbers on the receiving game, 58th percentile in terms of receiving yards per game. I saw a couple drops out there. There was a couple issues in pass protection, just being able to identify where the pressure is coming, but that's also an inexperience issue. So it's kind of like, will this develop with more reps? I think possibly so. And yeah, I see the same thing as you in terms of comps. Travis Etienne, Lamar Miller, Rashad Penny are kind of these bigger explosive backs that had varying degrees of success, and obviously injuries play a part of that as well. But yeah, I think this is like a classic late round two, early round three. You're not trying to make him Najee Harris as a big touch guy. You're kind of go into this 15 touches per game. And that was like one of the last points here. Only averaged 13.5 touches per game. That's his most across a season. So that's not a whole lot here. And there's other backs in this class that are kind of stuck in this 12 to 15 touches per game. We'll see if he can kind of expand on that at the next level.
Yeah, again, 94th percentile in forced missed tackles per attempt as a runner, 91st percentile in yards after contact. On top of that, just quickly, his pass pro, and I should say very few NFL prospects are great in pass protection. Most recently, we can point to Kyren Williams being outstanding at it. I didn't see a ton of straight up pass pro reps in 2023. There was one bad one against Pitt where there was a blitzer up the middle. It led to an incompletion. He held him off at first, but then got kind of pushed in the and back. And then Jordan Travis failed to hit an open receiver over the middle of the field. Another really bad one I felt against Louisville. But again, as you can say that, I did feel like he was comfortable as a receiver out in space, soft with his hands there. And as the NFL struggles to create downfield explosive plays in the passing game, this can be a guy who creates explosive plays in the running game. Rashad Penny coming out of San Diego State in the first round is a perfect example of this. Not saying that Trey Benson is going to go in the first round. He's someone who has always had like a secondary runner with him, but was always explosive plays on the field. You hit one of those, it can change the course of a game. And Trey Benson might have that in his back.
And almost every single team uses a tandem backfield approach. There's very few true bell cows. So I think that we just have to be more comfortable with, all right, the running back that we're drafting, he's getting 14 touches. He's not getting the 22 touches that we were used to out there. So in the model, 77th percentile, totally fine. Nothing too crazy. Unfortunately, because he was in the committee, he was only in the 49th percentile in terms of age and adjusted production. So he's fine. I think that his tape was better than his production. There's a lot of mouths to feed. Go watch our Johnny Wilson and our Keon Coleman videos as well. The quarterback runs a lot as well. So there were some issues in terms of like how we're scheming up touches. The 42% success rate is a little bit because he dances a little bit. But I think generally I came away impressed. So I have an early round three grade on him. He's the RB2 for me pre-draft. I would take him in this exact type of role. And like you said, some explosiveness out of this position is more valuable now just based off of how defenses are playing against offenses.
And just the raw numbers, I'm sure producer Weaves has already put him up there, but 154 carries, 990 yards in 2022, 156 carries, 906 yards this past season. And Trey, I got to tell you, man, from one guy with big quads to another, pant shopping is not fun. Suit shopping, not fun. So look, I feel your pain, brother. This is Tennessee running back Jalen Wright.
Holy smokes, could this dude absolutely hit the gas. 4.38 speed, 99th percentile broad jump, and you can see that on film all the time. And that's going to be the thing that we have to discuss in this video, though, is how was he getting set up for all these explosive runs? And just a little stat to kind of start this show off, because I think it's really important for this video. He had more attempts with five or fewer defenders in the box than he did with seven plus defenders in the box. Now, I'm not talking about eight defenders. I'm just talking about seven defenders in the box. This Tennessee offense is very good for college because they play with so much spacing. As we're trying to do our job over here on the channel and project this thing forward, we have to really try to decide how much of this was because of his vision and his explosiveness versus just because he was getting to the second level. Only on 33% of his runs did he actually get hit at the line of scrimmage, which is a very, very, very low number. So super impressive when once you get to the second level, how he gets there. Yeah. I have some questions still.
I have some other numbers on top of that. Per PFF, Jalen Wright had just four carries this entire season when facing eight plus defenders in the box. And just five total outside runs, which I kind of think gets lost in this conversation here too, because while the Vols do an awesome job at the college level of turning everything into one-on-ones, that's just not possible in the NFL. And since you have those one-on-ones at times, and I know producer Weaves is awesome at his job, so he's probably throwing these up there on the video, you literally see five offensive linemen versus four defenders.
Four.
Five versus five. And so that leads to, at worst sometimes for Jalen Wright, one-on-one situations. And then Josh Heupel does a sweet job with the wide receivers of turning them into true one-on-one situations. He literally makes it so, hey, I'm going to recruit really good athletes to maximize on their athleticism in one-on-one situations on the NFL field. And Hayden, how I kind of viewed it, he's running between the tackles so often. We'll get to those style of runs in a moment, but it's basically the bag drill at the NFL combine. Okay. In the first three steps, it's like step, step, step over the cones. And then the bag goes to one side, which is his offensive lineman, and he cuts off of it the opposite way. And then it's a runway and he just runs in a straight line.
Yeah.
That was so many of the Tennessee Volunteers runs this year with Jalen Wright. And he was able to maximize them because, as you said, he's an incredible athlete.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, he averaged 7.4 yards per carry, so many explosive runs, lots of 30, 40, 50 yard touchdowns on top of that. In terms of his like open field elusiveness, I didn't see like so much shake to like make me jump out of my seat. To me, he was just running right by guys. He's a little bit undersized, like 210 pounds is like big enough to carry a workload, but only 38th percentile BMI. I didn't see like massive legs out of him. I thought he went down at times. But in terms of just like having a lane and being able to hit it immediately, Raheem Mostert, Lamar Miller, I brought up, Elijah Mitchell, these guys are just like, boom, and you're off and running. He at least can do that. Now, if he's really good with his vision and stuff, which I don't have a good feel for him, there's sometimes I thought he was.
You really can't.
Yeah. Sometimes I thought he was indecisive. Maybe he actually is good at it, and then you can project him into a different scheme. But right now, it's a lot of question marks with his profile. I hope he hits it because his tape was a lot of fun to watch once he had a little bit of cushion there. It was just like basically the Jalin Hyatt discussion all over again, but now at the running back position.
Yeah, he was 80th percentile in forced missed tackles as a runner. And I think a major part of that is he broke a bunch of ankle tackles when running up the middle of the field. Again, that was at full speed as a defender is trying to close, and frequently because there were so few linebackers on the field and he already run past the defensive lineman, it was corners or safeties. And that's much easier, especially when you're in open space, to break tackles when you're at full speed versus running into muddy situations, running into trash and working through your bodies. Again, the Vols are very good at that, but that's just not the type of defensive fronts or defensive looks that he's going to have to run into in the NFL. Would it be fair to say that we don't know if he can do the dirty work as a running back?
I think that's totally fair. And I think that's going to be the reason why I have him a little bit lower. He's my RB6. I think there's some people out there that have him as like the RB1, 2, or 3. I just couldn't get there because of the question marks. I'm not saying he can't do it because there's no evidence that he can't do it, but I think it's a little bit of projection for him to do it. Where I did really like Jalin Wright and Josh Heupel did the same exact thing is they would get him running like at the snap or right before the snap on some catches out in the flats at full speed, fast twos, fast threes, fast fours, a couple screens at wide receiver, and get him against man coverage with all that space. This is where you're going to get the most out of Jalin Wright. And I thought that his hands working in the flats and like keeping that speed and that momentum going, I thought that was pretty smooth. So I think that he's going to be the speed component of a 1-2 punch, the lightning, if you will, and there'll be some thunder back that'll be right next to him. And that's kind of how the NFL is going. I think that trying to project him as some bell cow, I think would be a step too far in my eyes. And I just think there's not that he can't do these things. It's just there's no evidence. And he's been in this system for 3 years.
Mostert is an interesting example. Let's remember that Raheem Mostert, I believe, was either a 7th-round pick or undrafted free agent.
And 20 touchdowns.
Right. He has learned to do this and has been in the right systems for it, right? There's like a spectrum of these pure athletes that either don't hit or hit. The bottom of that spectrum to me is Niall Davis. You remember him?
Yep.
Arkansas. Yep. And then at the top, it's David Johnson. And David Johnson had like this incredible fluidity to his game and was a very capable receiver, outstanding kick returner on top of that. So that's like when all the pieces come together. But just again, to outline the situation that Jalin Wright played in, 344 players, running backs and quarterbacks in college football last season had 100 plus carries. Okay. Jalin Wright was 19 with an average of 3.1 yards afforded to him before first contact out there. 232nd in the country of his yards were after contact this past season. On top of that, we mentioned the 8-plus man boxes. Just 3% of his runs were against 8-man boxes. Only 3 running backs in the NFL last season saw under 10%, and none, obviously, at 3%. So, like, again, totally understand that he is 92nd percentile in yards after contact. Totally understand that his first 5 yards in his burst that he plays with, and also the 98th percentile broad jump, 86th percentile vert that he brings the tape to the fun 5-5, 10 yards. But I'm just saying he is all athlete right now. And I don't even know how NFL coaches can trust that he can carry out the rushing assignments that they're going to have to see in the league. Yes, there were plenty of pulling offensive linemen. There was power. There was trap. There's all this stuff. But it was all just glued between the tackles. And so it was very decisive of cut off your guy when you see a lane and run in a straight line.
Yeah,
he did sometimes drift to the sideline and outrun people that way. But just going through all these other running backs in this class, very different, other than USC and Marshawn Lloyd.
I mean, total outliers. 7 career under center runs. So he's another one of these backs that never ran under center. They would pull these linemen in this offense, but
which makes it very defined.
Yes, the first level it's up the middle, and then from the second level it's based off of speed. He can kind of go everywhere. So Yeah, I don't know what to do with him. I can see him being really good because, like, to me, like, the athletic profile that we saw, it translates to the tape. Like, every single time he has the ball, I'm seeing somebody that's absolutely flying down the field. But at the same time, only 13 touches per game in his final season. So there's a little bit of, like, how much volume could he get here? The BMI in the 30th percentile is a little bit more slender out there, which is not a complete red flag, especially in today's NFL after seeing what, like, Devon Achane just did this season. But I think that it's going to be very particular what type of role he does. And it also be one of these types where I wouldn't be surprised if as a rookie he struggles and then all of a sudden kind of gets things under control maybe as a sophomore. Yeah.
I know that Devon Achane weighs a lot less than the 210 pounds that Jalen Wright brings to the table. But I think the NFL kind of gave us a bit of a gauge on this type of profile last year with Devon Achane going in the third round and then Izzy Abanaconda going in the fifth round. I think Jalen Wright is more physical and better than Izzy Abanaconda, even though the people out there loved Izzy.
They loved Izzy.
They loved him. But I would say he's much closer to that than he is with Devon Achane, who was a primary runner at Texas A&M, who also very, very intriguing. Let's put it that way. And obviously awesome in the system that he's in. So again, there are all these types. I'm not with you that, like, he should be drafted as a secondary running back on his roster right now. Like, to me, he's almost the third running back that you hope can develop. Mm-hmm. But maybe I'm just totally off and I just can't project these types of players from this offense. But it just gives me more questions versus, oh, he's an athlete. We know he's an athlete. Mm-hmm. You know, I just don't have much to go on beyond that.
Yeah, I have like late round three, early round four. So it's in the definitely in the next tier below the Trey Bensons and the Jonathan Brooks that we've talked to in previous episodes. I think it's definitely a tier. I think most people have him in the same tier as those guys. I just can't get there. So whether he's an RB2 or RB3, I think it'll all depend on the year, the landing spot, all those type of things. But yeah, I'm excited to see him. I want him on 10 touches out there as a rookie. I want to see what he does because when things are cooking, it's really going.
10 touches is a lot already as a rookie.
I mean, let's gear him up towards the second half of the season. I mean, I will say this with Jalen Wright, though. Like, the bust level is there.
He did only have 10 targets his first 2 years at Tennessee, so it does help that we did get 23 targets this past season. And as you said, a lot of them were like slip screens or get him on the move and get him out in space again. His, I think, explosiveness showed up as a pass protector because he is like a punch as a pass protector, not necessarily with his fist, but he's like a battering ram one time. Yeah. And then like, that's how he protects. And it's not necessarily, I'm going to engage with you, but again, it's just funny to me, ironic that he uses his one hit explosiveness. Yeah. And then that's his pass pro style.
That makes me a little nervous though. Cause like, that's all or nothing. And if you miss, then all of a sudden your quarterback takes it,
and totally get it. Trevor Sigma does an awesome job over at PFF. In his draft guide, he said that Jalen Wright is one of the best pass protectors in college football. I would take it with a little bit of grain of salt with how I just outlined it. And that's just from my seat. We can all have a different opinion when we watch these prospects. All right.
Very interesting.
I mean, highly.
Yes.
Who knows what we see from Jalen Wright 3 years from now in the NFL. If it hits, it's outstanding. And it's really, really fun to watch on a weekly basis in the NFL because explosive plays are rare and you can bring them to the table. All right. Go and check out the other running backs that we have on the channel, wide receivers, tight ends, quarterbacks as well. Don't leave without clicking another one.